In Turkey and Syria right now, it is dark and cold. Hundreds of thousands of people have no shelter. More than 19,000 people are dead.
In Syria, a years-long civil war adds to the grief. Sherwin Kesam is coordinating relief efforts for Doctors Without Borders. He's in Amsterdam and has family in Syria. Sherwin, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sherwin, we haven't heard much about Syria in the aftermath of this earthquake. Can you start by telling us what you're hearing from your doctors on the ground there?
So in the last 72 hours after the earthquake, we saw a lot of houses, a lot of buildings were destroyed, resulting in shocking numbers of death and injuries, causing damage to infrastructures, both in Turkey and in Syria. And that left thousands of people homeless. The reason why this happened, because there are many houses that were destroyed previously because of the conflict. And of course, with the earthquake, they were easily damaged. That left a lot of people displaced. My team, our teams actually, let's say, in three geographical areas, witnessed more than 3,600 injured and more than 550 people are dead. And we are expecting the numbers to be increasing massively in the coming period, because the number of dead people in the coming 72 hours will be much higher as the possibility of finding survivors is getting less and less.
I mean, you said it's 72, almost 80 hours now. And I'm wondering, given the freezing conditions, if that means that teams on the ground just abandon looking for survivors and focus on those people who are alive but badly injured.
Yeah, the problem is that the capacity of the civil defense units in this area is limited. The white helmets, normally they are familiar with saving people under the rubbles and the debris because of the airstrikes and the shelling. And normally that's happening in one neighborhood and another neighborhood, one city, two cities, 10 villages, but not such kind of a massive destruction. Also, as you said, the winter made things harder. You know, it's a bit a tragedy that I was talking to my mother like a couple of weeks ago, and she was saying, like, I wish if there would be rain. It's so dry. The crops are not growing anymore. The last 2 years, we are suffering because of the, you know, like the food security in Syria is severely affected because of the lack of rain. And now, after this earthquake, it's raining. There are a bit of floods in the Asi River Valley, and actually a lot of water entered into some IDPs camps and villages in the southern part of Idlib because of the river flooding. So the weather situation and the weather condition is actually making it harder than it is. And there is another problem, which is all of us around the world we're struggling with the energy crisis. In Europe, in Arab worlds, in Africa, because of the Ukrainian-Russian conflict, there was a big energy crisis. And that, of course, is in Syria, too. So they don't have enough fuel to run generators. I mean, you need some heavy machineries that require electricity and fuel. I heard from some friends that the self-administration of northeast Syria, which is the area that is controlled by the Kurdish administration, are sending some fuel tanks toward this area, but still they are not able to access into the devastated area because of political problems. And on the checkpoints, it's a bit complicated to move from one control area to another. So just to show you how complex and how challenging it is.
And would that be the reason, because we're hearing just today that UN aid convoys have been able to enter, is it this political conflict that is the reason that the international community hasn't been able to send aid to help Syria like it is with Turkey?
Actually, this is one of the reasons. So there is the internal access problems internally inside Syria, international borders and cross borders problem. So the one I'm talking about is inside Syria, which is the Kurdish control area, which is also a bit supported by the American administration. Those guys are having the oil fields. And there was actually an American envoy recently that was there just to coordinate, let's say, some of the humanitarian aid that can possibly cross from east to west. Because now Syria is divided mainly between three governments, or three de facto authorities. One of them is the Syrian government, which is controlling 60-65% of the country. Then the other is divided between the Kurds in the east and the opposition supported by Turkey in the west. And the western part is the most severely damaged part, besides the government control area. So recently the UN, as you said, yes, the first 48 hours, they were not able to deliver the aid because the roads were severely damaged in Antakya, the province, Turkish province next to the Bab al-Hawa. But the problem is that this corridor is normally the access, let's say the humanitarian aid access toward Syria through Bab al-Hawa border corridor is controlled fully by the Security Council resolution, which is normally involve United States, Russia, Turkey, Syrian governments, which is making it very much complicated.
You know, I just can only imagine that it's the regular, ordinary Syrians who are victims of this earthquake who might just get lost in the middle of all of this, because we're hearing the government of Bashar al-Assad telling the international community that it's time to drop the sanctions so it can purportedly help its people. The French government has sending aid, but saying it won't send it directly to the Assad government. It just seems like a really big geopolitical fight. And ordinary Syrians, what's happening to them, especially the victims of this earthquake?
Indeed. And this is what we are trying to do as Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctor Without Borders. We are trying to focus on the population. We are trying to reach people in need, despite or without looking at their ethnical backgrounds, at their religion, at their alliances, and their political opinions. So for us, as Syrians, we don't see these borders. We want the aid and the assistance to be delivered to the people in need without looking at who is in control in this area.
Yeah, and might this be, we've seen so many Syrians have to flee their country over the past decade, but even just recently, might this be another moment where Syrians are forced to leave?
The issue is that those Syrians who are leaving right now, the 4 million people are living in this enclave, Idlib and Western Aleppo, they are already people who've been displaced sometimes between 2 to 20 times. So people always were leaving closer to the Turkish border, seeking safety and security. And finally, because after the 2015 EU-Turkish government agreement, Syrians are not allowed to go to Turkey without a visa. So you need to apply for a visa, and the visa is very hard to achieve. And then the only way is to cross the border illegally. And it is impossible because there is 900-kilometer wall on the border.
And now Turkey at the border is devastated too by this earthquake, so that makes it even harder, I imagine.
Even to add another layer of the complexity there, there are more than 3.6 million Syrians in Turkey itself. And I would say between 50 to 65% of the Syrians living in Turkey are actually in these four provinces, because they were always seeking safety and security as closer as possible to the Syrian border, because even after 12 years of the conflict, the Syrians wanted to be as close as possible to their country. Actually, all this area that is now affected by the earthquake, I used to work in every town in this area supporting the Syrian refugees who were crossing. But now, as you said, the situation in Turkey is also very complicated. To be honest, I see hard days, harder days for those people. Can you imagine after 12 years of a conflict? There are even harder days waiting for these people.
And that doesn't even include the trauma and the mental health crisis that I'm sure is widespread in the community.
One of the biggest needs in the Netherlands is the mental health. Sometimes if you need a psychologist, you have to wait 3 to 6 months. So imagine if you are alone in a camp, in a tent, in a makeshift house, in the border area, after maybe 5, 6, 7, even sometimes 12 years, of the conflict without any kind of idea what may happen tomorrow, the mental health burden is severe and it's very heavy.
Gosh, Shoen, you've told us so much here, which is so devastating and disturbing on many levels. Is there anything else you want to leave us with?
It's obvious why we are having this situation. I mean, even before the earthquake, there was something that in the humanitarian aid field, they're calling Syria fatigue. there was a bit of fatigue on the media and also internationally, because the Syrian crisis just continued for the last 12 years, especially this part of Syria in northwest, in Idlib and Aleppo governorate. You can consider it as a forgotten territory. It is one of these areas that is just 4.1 million people are living there. And to be honest, the situation is very hectic even before this earthquake. But the earthquake added another layer of complexity in this situation.
Shawan Qasim is of Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders. He's in Amsterdam, but he is leading the effort in Syria right now. Thank you so much, Shawan.